Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and live in Technicolor is Paul Hill, looking smart as ever. You're right, Paul. How's things going?
Fine, actually. Thanks, Justin. The market's obviously been a bit choppy of late. Everything other than AI related has been absolutely hammered. In fact, I was looking at the indices just this morning, and year to date, the AIM index is down by more than 5%. The FTSE 100, 250 are all flat, and even the Dow is slightly down year to date. But NASDAQ's up 24%. So I don't know how you're treating it, but I think other than the sort of the world's largest sort of seven tech stocks, then everybody's portfolio has been sort of treading water or going down over the last sort of 5 months.
Yeah, largely, it doesn't pay, does it, look at NASDAQ, because it's a distorted view on the markets, you know? Because I think now, looking at it, I mean, I did tweet out today saying AIM all share is like 5 points of its October lows. And it's seeming to me that fundamentally the macro isn't getting any better, you know? And I think that was a fake break, a fake rally from October up to February, the rally we had, and now it's rolling over. I think we will go lower. I think there's so many, you know, things out there. It takes a while, doesn't it? All these high interest rates, all this kind of thing, it takes a while to play into the economy. And I think I can't see the economy picking up. The Fed, they may change their mind. The central banks may change their mind. But they're going to want to kill inflation. And they've said a couple of times, even Jeremy Hunt said, he's comfortable we go into a recession. I thought, well, you are, Jeremy, because you won't lose your job. But other people will lose their job, and they probably need that to happen anyway to slow down inflation. So I think we are going lower. I really do. And I think
on the markets.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, we're really a couple of points off of the AIM all share low anyway from October. But I think we are. Yeah, I think we're in for a sustained sort of, until we start seeing that core inflation coming down, you know, trend wise, three maybe readings or more. Now, I think we're going to have a bit in a sticky situation. You've got the housing prices rolling over, oil price rolling over, inverted yield curve. There's now the EY, Admiral Club saying there's a chance of a recession in UK and US and most of Europe. In fact, Germany's in recession. I can't see how it's going to get better. We may have a technical rally, but I don't know. I just think it's going lower.
Yeah, I mean, I have a slightly different take, actually. I mean, I think we agree on in most things. We've been talking about sort of what the, you know, first half, second half split's going to be. But I think the economic picture is clarifying, even though a lot of people are saying it's becoming more confusing and the data's very conflicting. But my take on it is that over the last two or three months, what's proved to central bankers is that unless the labour market cracks, as you rightly point out, inflation, certainly on the core level, won't come down because it's such a big part of all the West's economies. So inflation needs to, the unemployment situation needs to increase, which will obviously, you know, provide a drag on the actual economy. And to do that, interest rates will need to stay higher. So I'm with you on the thesis that I think economically wise, we will see tougher headwinds going into the second half. And I'm still, my base case thesis is still that we're going to get a recession towards the back end of 2023, which will go into 2024. And I'm worried about the top level S&P 500 earnings for 2024, no doubt about it. And that will reduce the multiple. So I'm with you in terms of the indices. I think they're going to be, you know, sort of like, you know, under headwinds going forward. However, unlike you, I'm actually more positive because valuations of small caps and even mid caps have come down so fast and so hard over the last, you know, sort of a few months. Actually, they're looking really attractive. So I've turned from a sort of like a reluctant bear to actually a cautious bull. And I'm starting to pick up pieces and get my stock watch list is getting larger and larger. And I'm ready to put some money to work because I actually think if you sort of like separate out the economy from the stock market, particularly the lower levels, and you mentioned the AIM index is only 5 points above where it was in the lows of October, then I can see some good quality companies trading at really long, you know, really good valuations that I'm prepared to put up a reasonable sum of money. So, yes, I think the economic headwinds are going to get worse. But I actually think the lower reaches of the stock market, the small caps, could do better. And it will come. And the point that they will do that is that when the economics do start rolling over early next year, the central bankers will have hopefully sort of solved their inflation problem by sort of like, you know, with unemployment nudging up, and then we'll start reducing interest rates. That will be the tailwind for small caps when actually the cost of capital increases.
Mm-hmm. So it is about time periods, I suppose. You know, I think there's more opportunities out there, and it's going to be happen over the next few months. So you tend to get these cycles take, you know, in the industries, you know, 3 months round about to high to low, and then, you know, it takes a while to get around. So I think we're in a couple of months of you know, of bearishness, but I think towards maybe the back end of the year we may see a rally. But again, there's all that stats about a market doesn't rally pretty much until official, you know, recession is announced. And as yet, we haven't had that in the UK. I mean, Germany's had it. We're probably in recession. I mean, to be honest, I remember before when they officially announced the recession, was it back in the Great Financial Crisis in America? We were in recession, actually, 3 months back. So it's like when they review the figures, you know, and they get more accurate data, they realize, oh, you are in recession. And it's, you know, the markets are always worse 6 to 12 months before a recession, you know, when the recession's announced. I mean, the big drops happened, right? I just think it'll be hard work for a while. And I think there are opportunities, like you say, but I want to hold a bit of cash and I want to, you know, take advantage.
What's your cash position at the moment?
60%.
So, right, okay. So you've actually sort of like cashed out a lot of positions then.
Literally, do you know what I've done at the moment? I still hold. What do I hold? I hold the Destiny
XP Pharma, Factory.
I still hold those. True Fit, I still hold. Destiny Pharma, yeah, Good Energy. And I've also started, I thought, do you know what? While I'm sitting here with cash, I started piling into a dividend fund, paying fund. It's an ETF, and it's the FTSE 350, basically, highest 50 yielding companies. So I thought, well, I'm not going to sit in cash. I'm going to put a little bit in that every month and get a return on it because, you know, like I say, it sort of follows the FTSE 100 a little bit, but it also is 350 as well. So I'm just piling into that a little bit, and I'm just waiting around. This company's now, with alerts coming up on my computer right now, I'm looking at and I like, but I think I'm just going to hold fire, you know, wait for the whites of their eyes. And because I think there's opportunity. The reason why I got to this cash is I think there's excellent opportunity in the next 6-12 months. But I'm just cautious at the moment. I'm thinking, what's going to happen? You've got the debt ceiling problem, then you've got the Fed having to issue more debt and all that stuff. It's just lots of players in the market and this AI bubble going on. Anything? I'm still not.
What's your take on XP Factory? Because they came out with some pretty blockbuster results last week. In fact, I think they held their forecast for this year, which is going to be a sort of a transformational period, 2023, for the company as well.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? What I quite liked and was encouraged by when the results came out on the day. Unlike other companies I've seen recently, where it's final results or interim results that just tanked, you know, they rose and then people just sold into it. And that's so annoying. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've had a year, a transformational year.
Get used to it.
I know. That's a typical example of a bear market, isn't it? People just take a bit of profit. Any rise in the shares they get, even if it's not profit, they're like, I'll get out here anyway. It's fine. It's rallied a bit. But so last year was a transformational year. They went from literally 7 million top line revenue the year before to 22 million. They opened 27 Boom Battle bars, four escape punts, and literally, they were, you know, operating profit of 1.2, I don't know, 1.5, I think it was, 1.2 or 1.3 million of operating profit from a half million loss the year before. So they're not really, you know, transformed the group completely. It was a year of build, a year of costs, you know, of building stuff. So it's a lot of, you know, costs going into that business over the last year. Now they're all there. It's all done. Pretty much all the high-end costs, the fitting out, all that stuff is there. And so they're going to go to another 84% growth this year. And I chatted Richard, the CEO. He said, if we do nothing this year, absolutely nothing as far as expansion is concerned, it'll be a materially better year anyway, because, like I said, our margins will improve, top lines improve, because most of the sites opened with a back end of the last year, and they also got affected by strikes. And, of course, lots of Christmas parties were delayed or cancelled. But he said, so even if we do nothing, we'll be materially better off this year, because, like I said, all those costs have gone in, and now we're starting to run these new bars, and we'll have a full year of run of it. But we are still expanding. We're going to open about five Boom Battle bars and maybe one or two escape hunts. And we're also learning to get better at the business, because Boom Battle Bar is very new. We're learning what works, what doesn't work, you know, and where to co-locate. So, yeah, and even over the next few years, it's going from, you know, 42 million top line, and you know, operating profit of close to 3 million for 2023, 2024, 52 million, another sort of 25% increase on top line, and margins improving again. And I think it's like a 30 million market cap. It's like, and I'm, listen, man, I went on the weekend to Boom Battle Bar with a couple of mates of mine, because they come down every sort of quarter and we go out. Again, literally, it was a lovely sunny day, which I thought would put people off. But we got there, and literally all the games were taken up on a Saturday. And we got there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And again, leaving at about 3 or 4, jam-packed again. And literally, there were people coming in fully booked. And I thought, this is not... And even I took my wife, Megan, for the first time ever. And she said, excellent, isn't it? They're addicted to shuffleboard. So, because basically, you can drink anywhere, but drink and have a bit of fun and play a game. Yeah. You can charge for the drinks, you can charge for the games. If you just sit in all bar one, for example, just can charge for the drinks. So you are double charging you there. So it's excellent. And even she said, if you go to a bar now and sit down, you're probably thinking, what do we do now? What games? Let's play a game of who can sit in the toilet the longest, or, you know, if you go to another bar.
The whole sector of experimental leisure certainly seems to be taking market share, doesn't it, from the sort of traditional bars, but more so actually casual dining, because that's really struggling. And you saw the same message coming from Hollywood Bowl as well, the 10-pin bowling operator in the UK. People want to go out and enjoy themselves, and I think it's in the right spot, isn't it? So you're holding that one then for the long term.
I've held that for quite a few years now, but I just think in a bull market that would have carried on rallying after the final results. In a bear market, it's not. So you just got a bit more patience, because, you know, like I said, the heavy lifting has been done by the company. You know, that expansion year, which they set themselves a high target and they achieved it, has been done, and now it's just literally they're generating cash now. They've, you know, all the costs have all been sunk in there, and they're just generating cash. So I think, why wouldn't?
No, I'm with you. I was really impressed by the results and the strong outlook. I mean, I think the quarter one trading, isn't it? It's ahead of expectations.
Yeah.
So, and what also was really promising is that the format for Escape Hunt has been going for some time, but that actually is beating expectations as well. So it isn't just Boom Battle Bars. Escape Hunt is really popular also.
I mean, exactly. And Richard said, actually, this, you know, I asked him a question saying, you know, what are you looking to improve? Have you found ways? Mm. He said, for example, the costs on the original Escape Hunts, 18%, I think, growth on those. And like I said, they haven't sort of, you know, reinvested or materially invested more some new games in. The same games. And in fact, he said, even with Boom Battle Bars, we found now we've had to extend certain bars. And in Oxford Street, we've had to put a new bar in because there's so much demand for drink.
Yeah.
And in O2, a new bar in. I thought, well, that's not bad, is it? I mean, you know, I'm just going to put a bar in, not a lot, and you'll get a lot of money from it. So it just seems to be going in the right direction. I just think there's a generational change in the way people socialise these days. It is about experiences. People enjoy that, going out and having fun with their friends. And in fact, if you look at the holiday market, holidays are very expensive, so expensive, and yet people are still going on holidays. They now, it's almost like COVID is sort of changing people's psychology, where they think, you know, it's not things, it's experiences. That's what people want in life. And you realise at the end of the day, and I think it's based around almost, if you look at Instagram, people take pictures and photographs, and that's memories, essentially. And you realise, actually, when you go, you're not going to say, oh, I wish I'd watched a bit more telly. You know, if you're in your deathbed, I wish I watched a bit more telly. You know, you wouldn't. You say, I wish I'd gone out and done a bit more with friends or something. You know, that's what you're missing out on. So I think experiences
are... You know what me and you are going to say, though, aren't we?
Yeah. I wish I'd
wish we'd be on the stock market a bit further, yeah. A bit longer.
No, I wish I'd, on my deathbed, I wish I'd done that on that spreadsheet.
I wish I'd bought at this price and sold there.
I know, exactly.
What about updates on Polarian Imaging and Destiny Pharma? Because Polarian Imaging is sort of like first, it had its first patient, didn't it, with its newly FDA approved Xeno, whatever, I can't remember what it was called, but the gas,
yeah,
Xenon,
MRI Xenovue, the thing is, I'm just really frustrated, and I'm not in Polarian. I love the tech, and you know, it's ground-cutting tech, and I'm just thinking, you know, you've got concept, proof of concept has been proven pretty much. You've got, you know, all the big sort of universities trialling it and reviewing about 100 peer-reviewed papers on it. So it makes sense. But yet, commercial traction now is quite slow, and I think, what's going on here? And whether they're doing, I'm hoping that they're, you know, doing some kind of big sort of order with them, but they, but I mean, you know, Cincinnati Children's Hospital has had an order from them, and so that's going well. But I think people just expect a lot more orders. I think a flood of orders were expected to happen as soon as the FDA clearance. And I don't know what's going on. Things like these can take longer. We all know that. You know, commercializing an enterprise can take longer. So I don't know what's going on. It seems like, you know, if you want to find out, if you are, you know, an institution that leads in a field in some respect, you need the best technology. And this is the best technology in regards to lungs. So, you know, a little doubt it is the best tech. I'm just saying, why aren't, you know, you're getting more commercial contracts coming through? I don't know why that is. It's frustrating because I said for a long time it just seems almost a no-brainer why the best institutions.
Well, I mean, my take on it is that there is plenty happening in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the sort of the transformational deal that Intelligent Ultrasound did with their effectively ultrasound AI, you know, intelligence, etc., that they put in with GE Healthcare, that's the type of agreement that I think that Polarian needs. Because if it joins, you know, with somebody like, I don't know, GE again for its MRI, or Siemens or Toshiba or any other sort of the major big four, etc., then that will be a huge sort of inflection point for the business, because then you'll be starting to retrofit some of the MRI scanners, you know, the hundreds of thousands of them in the world, with the actual Xenovue. So that's probably what they need. I'm sure I'd be stunned if they're not working on it. In fact, it'd be almost amazing that the sort of the big four MRI manufacturers aren't actually talking to Polarian Imaging. And if that comes out, that could be transformational for the share price.
Yeah. I mean, before they did say, you know, it's value add for those manufacturers. You know, their MRI machines will be used more, so it does help. Yeah, but yeah, at the moment it's just frustrating for shareholders, I said. But it's one of the things, isn't it? Where you raise, you can jump in too quickly and go too, you know, overexposing a company. The road of the business is quite a bumpy one. There's some potholes, you know, and literally it doesn't run smoothly at all. And like you could say, in 5 years' time, it could be flying, it could be worth multiples where we are now. But there was a period of time when you look back, there was doubt. And when that doubt was there, that was the time to invest. It's like the bear market. That's the stock market giving you discount, pretty much, you know? And it doesn't happen very often. It happens, bull market lasts between 5 and 10 years. And then you get sort of bear markets and corrections. But when the worry settles in, people back off. And you think, well, hang on, there's the opportunity where your discount is going to get good businesses, you know, going forward. Then there's the opportunity to sort of invest in good businesses, I suppose. But
I mean, looking at the market cap, it's only 51 million. I mean, it'd be dropping the ocean for one of the big four MRI scanners to actually, manufacturers to actually buy them out. That's probably something that investors don't see. They worry about the sort of the near term and what seems to be the analyst forecast on a standalone basis. But then, because you can't, it's impossible to model these strategic deals, whether it's basically doing a tie up with a big OEM, or in fact actually being bought out, and then you suddenly find 100% premium happens in the sort of healthcare area because the underlying technology is so valuable. But anyway, I'm with you. It's a sort of work in progress, but it's really interesting. They've got plenty of cash. I know they probably need some more if they're going to go and work on a standalone basis for next year, but I think it's definitely one to monitor quite closely because it seems hugely undervalued for its inherent IP.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What about Destiny Pharma? Because I did see the CEO decided to step away.
Yeah, but again, in this market, first of all, people sell and think about it later, you know. And and people say, "Oh, something wrong," you know. Let's be honest. Yeah. They've got two, like I said, late stage assets. You know, they've gone through phase two. These are independent, validated studies. You know, they have peer reviewed papers. There's nothing wrong with the assets. Nothing wrong with the business. This is a personal issue. I don't know why Neil, the CEO, stepped down. But the interim CEO, who's Dr. Deborah Barker, is a lot more experienced, by the looks of it. She's been at, just looking down, she's been high positions in Novartis, Roche, GSK, and she's still active now within biotech. Whereas Neil did have, in university, he was in biopharma, but then he became more of an accountant. So she's actually more experienced, but yet it's sold off a little bit. And I did sort of join their AGM call, and they said, listen, nothing's changed. We can't say why Neil's gone, and they said he's gone on to do other things. You never find out what it is. And I said, I was joking on the weekend podcast, I don't know, did he just insist on coming to the office dressed as a clown 7 days a week? What was this something personally did? I don't know what it was, but it's nothing to do with the assets they've got in the business, you know? But people want to know the explanation, and you won't get that. But they did state, you know, right now, the priority is getting a deal on the XF73, which is a potential blockbuster drug, and compared to, you know, products out there, it's a lot better on efficacy, and, you know, like I said, it's got a huge potential on there, and that's why you got. It's like I don't know any other stock where three brokers give a target of 800% up, and these are not silly targets. If you go through some of the broker notes, you'll see how they price that in, the royalties they get on these drugs going forward compared to the peers out there at the moment, and it makes sense. And even though it's a few years off, they do make sense. They've modelled it very accurately, and in fact, the spreadsheets they've come up with, they use, must put mine to shame, I think. But I just worry about the changeover, and there's no real deep explanation of why Neil's gone. And I think the share price hasn't performed since IPO. I mean, they IPO'd at 160, they're now at 30 pence. You know, they did that rally from December to January on the hope of the first deal, which they did, but then they did a discounted fundraise, which is good for people standing on the sidelines waiting to get involved, but not for existing shareholders expecting to go to the moon. But now they've got a strong balance sheet. You know, they've got a deal on one asset. The second asset, they said, you know, like I said, they're hoping for a big upfront cash payment because it's it's twice as big as the first asset in potential peak sales. And we are discussing already with parties, active parties, and we want to get the deal done before the end of the year. So, I mean, they're confident they get the deal on that, and I think that will start to see the share price rally because, like I said, it's a bigger asset potential, and they've got cash, which they didn't have last time in the second asset. And I think, I don't know why, maybe they've got, you know, I don't know. You've seen, if a share price doesn't perform sometimes, you know, you will have seen the board come together and say the share price isn't performing, and they can kick the CEO out, can't they? So I don't know what it is, what the reason is, but I don't think the potential of the company is, you know, any less bright because of that. Yeah. In fact, I think because of the CEO, she's quite experienced if you look at her track record, you know?
Yeah, I think you've got to really sort of like look through the noise and look at the bigger picture because, again, you know, we talked about Plarium Imaging with the, you know, it's only a 51 million market cap. Well, Destiny Pharma's only a 31 million market cap. And again, if the inherent IPR behind the actual business is really valuable, then I just don't think it's a stupid strategy for people to take a basket of sort of small cap healthcare stocks that have been knocked down indiscriminately. And then, yes, they won't all work, but you'll find a significant number of them will in terms of, you know, over the long term, whether that's through on a standalone basis or actually will just get bought out because there are large, you know, healthcare businesses, life science firms, or even big pharma who are looking for attractive assets at rock bottom prices. And even if you did 100% premium to today's price, it would still be a bargain as long as the IPR is valuable. So that's certainly an area that I'm looking at is knockdown healthcare. I mean, I had another one in terms of, I mean, it isn't in my portfolio, but I've been tracking for some time, is Oncommune, and they've got really attractive IPR, but they did two things over the last 2 weeks. First of all, they sold their products business, their early CDT lung cancer test, for about 13 million to Freno. And a great transaction. It means they can then totally concentrate on ImmunoInsights. And it also helps them with their balance sheet, et cetera, pays off some of their debt, gives them cash in the balance in the bank account to then sort of develop their, as I say, this ImmunoInsights platform that helps sort of like big pharma. to stratify clinical trial patients, etc. So it's really high IPR type business. So that was the first bit. But then they came out, they put out their half year results. And unfortunately, they've been hit by sort of like, you know, delays by their big customers who haven't actually done the trials, the samples, and sent them back. So they can't recognize the actual revenue, even though the contracts are in place. And that's going to be a sort of like an air pocket on their performance for the probably for the next 6 months. But it is picking up when effectively, certainly when it goes into 2024, but they've got enough cash and they've got enough funding to be able to do it. But the shares have been sort of like, you know, unfairly sold off. And you wouldn't believe this. The market cap is now less than £16 million. Now, the most valuable part of this business is ImmunoInsights by a mile. And it's difficult putting a number on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is worth 50 million quid on its own. It's currently trading at 15 million or 16 million. And and to give you an indication, they sold their early CDT test, that lung cancer test, for 13 million. So when you put that through the lens, it's definitely unfairly sort of like, you know, valued. And if, you know, I mean, I've interviewed the CEO, Adam Hill, on a numerous, you know, occasions. And I'll tell you, he will be totally cut up with what's actually happened to the actual share price. And, you know, 1,000% committed to turn this round and get the actual, you know, get that business sort of right sized and generating cash and growing its top line, because it's got so much IPR. And again, I just wouldn't be surprised if you had a big CRO, you know, healthcare CRO or a life science firm just saying, right, okay, let's have this. It's 15-16 million quid. Okay, even if I spent 35 million quid, double the share price, it'd still be an absolute bargain. So I think that's the thing that people sort of like miss. It's, you know, it's always the darkest before the dawn. When you see sort of news and in a bear market, things get sold off, but they get sold off so hard and so far that it becomes just dislocated with the inherent IPR, because, you know, you would not get more than, you know, the majority of the sort of the top 10 world's big pharma using this service on a regular basis, unless it had something, because these guys spend literally billions on, you know, developing their drugs, etc. So obviously they've got something really valuable. It's a matter of commercializing it in the right way. So again, I, you know, it just would not be surprised if you saw Polarian getting a bid, Destiny getting a bid, Oncommune getting a bid, and another one also. Which fell.
Sort of, I mean, that's bear market territory. When you have interim results there, and it fell like 48%. It's like, what?
Yeah. It's like, no, exactly. It's nuts. You know? It's absolutely nuts. But that's the way it is. It's the way the market sort of like, you know, is pretty, pretty, you know, sort of unsympathetic to everything. Yeah. But it's a really crazily low valuation. I mean, another one which came out with some good results actually is Lung Life last week, and they basically said, or it was started this week, they basically said they've now finished their patient validation test. They've just got to assimilate all the data, and hopefully those results will be released in probably around about 3 or 4 months' time. But they're totally on track with where they came with their IPR. And if you just recall, I mean, this is again, it's using CTC. Circulating tumor cell technology and AI to be able to improve the diagnosis of or the detection of lung cancer nodules to see whether these nodules are actually cancerous or benign. And it will improve sort of like, you know, the cost, it'll improve the safety for the patients, and also improve the speed as well. So it has lots of advantages. And they're hoping to make, for assuming that they just validate that validation test, rubber stamps the previous sort of like tests they've done on it, the data, then they'll start making first sales at the back end of this year. But again, I mean, they trade at what, 13 million market cap? I mean, it's frankly nuts. I mean, it really is crazy. So, and they've got cash, they've got enough cash in the bank to be able to last them at least until mid next year. So when you put that through the lens, you know, they fall into the same cap, Polarian, Destiny, Oncommune, you know, and Lung Life. If you take a basket of small shares like that, then at these rock bottom levels, you probably only need one of them to do well. And it will more than offset.
Why don't we set up a fund?
Exactly, yeah, I know.
And, you know, nice little, you know, exposure to all these, you know, sub 20 million with lots of potential Medicare or MedTech stocks.
I mean, if you're thinking about it, if you were sort of like a, you know, venture capitalist, et cetera, who had a sort of £300-400 million fund, you would just go around hoovering all these up, wouldn't you? As choice assets. And then to be able to stick them in and just wait. And, you know, you'd almost like cherry pick the ones and sell a few off to the highest bidder. Because they've all got very, very valuable IPR, but they're trading at just unbelievably rock bottom levels.
Yeah, no, I know. And, you know, I'm looking at one of the, well, you've mentioned one, in fact, Intelligent Ultrasound. I quite like that.
A
big rally. In fact, it was mentioned I've had him on the podcast, Stuart, the CEO, a few times, and I do like it. And to me, when you get, they've got IR, you know, AI, I mean, and this, like I said, validation is GE having their tech inside their machines to me. But it rallied like crazy off the back of a Midas column mentioned by Joanne Hart, who comes on the podcast now and again. And then it's come back down a little bit. So I'm just letting that settle down. But I want to see that, further updates on that. But I like that, you know, that their tech and so there's lots around. So anyway, what about your portfolio? What are you sitting on cash wise? Have you bought anything, sold anything?
Yeah, I mean, I'm at about 28% on of cash at the moment. I just bought recently Michelmersh Brick, which is a company that I owned before the pandemic, and I held it. I bought it probably around about 2015, sold it in December 2019 at a nice profit. I know it's a really good, strong management team, albeit the co-CEO is actually leaving to go to Brickability, I think, in about 12 months' time. Which is a bit sad, but Frank Hanna is really good. I mean, the business basically does premium bricks, aesthetically appealing sort of products compared to the standard sort of like, you know, your Breezebox or your standard brick. It has about 5% of the UK market, makes sort of like 120 million units a year. And it's a really good, solid business, trading at round about, so I think it's about nine times PE at the moment, solid balance sheet, got 10 million of cash, trades at 93p, got over 10p of cash as well, good margins. It's reiterated just recently, it's on track to hit its numbers. So it's a really good, solid business that I've owned before and done well out before. It's come down, sold off. And I actually think there's a number of big sort of catalysts for the actual business. First of all, as houses, you know, sort of like get constructed or get renovated, it's moving more towards premiumization, things, you know, for buildings and properties to look good. And this plays to them because they do sell unique products that you can't get other than if you actually import it, more expensive. So they do have, you know, quite a unique play there. So it's the premiumization of properties. And then you saw just recently, I think it was yesterday, the Labour Party, and it's really charming with the Conservatives as well. They want to, you know, build 300,000 houses a year compared to less than 200,000, you know, which we've actually managed. And one of the ways they're going to do that is say they're going to compulsorily purchase some land at sort of like farmland prices rather than including the hope price. And if they do that, then you'll see a lot more building of new properties. But there is only sort of 25-30% of Michelmersh revenues which are generated from new build. The rest comes from RMI and from upgrades and stuff like that. So they're a really good, strong, solid, dependable business, cash on the balance sheet. The tried and trusted management team, very sensible, and they're cash generative. So I've really got no problem with them. I'm just going to hold them, you know, last for some time. Solid business.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, is it sort of priced in, I suppose? But, I mean, there's worry about the housing market at the moment. In fact, I've just sold my Gleeson because it started to roll over on the chart there. It's going to go lower. I know it is. I want to get back into house builders. I do. But I was thinking, you know, we've seen that rally and it's come back and rolled over. And I think it goes sideways for a while. But there's worry about the housing market, house prices going down and mortgage rates going up. How will that play into that, do you think, in the Michelmersh?
I think this is the best place. It's basically a niche provider of building products that's going to win both ways in terms of if the housing market goes down, then there's going to be, you know, less imports coming in as its competition. So it should be able to hold its prices. It's got rock bottom inventory levels, number of bricks. So if you've got a soft patch, it will just start, you know, sort of like building more, you know, bricks, et cetera. So it's put it into storage. And it's isn't that perfect space. If the housing market slows down on new build, then they're going to build more nicer properties, and this again will play to them. So I'm very this one. Even if you went through a hard patch in the era of the recession, it will come through. Yes, the shares may sell off, but I'm not interested in the next 12 months. I'm interested in the next 3 to 5 years. And I'll just hold it. It's a good solid business. It's been around. And then the cherry on the top of the cake is that, you know, it is a trophy asset. And don't be surprised if somebody puts a number on these and buys them out, because at sort of 9-10 times, you know, PE with cash on the balance sheet, it's ridiculous. I mean, I think they're trading about 5.5 times EBITDA, which is just nuts for such a high cash generative business, which they've demonstrated time and time again. That's the case. So,
To be fair, I quite like the chart, because they're now sort of almost trading in a flat range, and you can see they've tested like 90 pence. It doesn't really go below that. You know, they had a sell off back in October, but they've traded in a range for a while. And so, yeah, I quite like that, because it's got the pound back to 90 pence. So it seems like it's finding a nice level there. So when did you buy those recently?
Yeah, I've only bought them in the last week or 2 weeks, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the last one, I mean, I've been adding, as you know, the first one I bought at the start of the year was Pfizer, which actually came out with a announcement that one of its big RSV vaccine had been approved by the FDA last night, which moved the dial. And is, you know, you've seen in China as well the uptick in COVID infections, which will only accelerate. I know they don't sell in yet into China, but is in terms of their vaccine, but they do sell their antiviral into China. So that should be a benefit. And they've got a good pipeline. So yes, the shares are off since I bought them, down about 10, 15% as the whole healthcare sector has been knocked. But what you've seen there is basically just rotation into all things AI, into Nvidia, into Microsoft, and Facebook and Google and people like that. So they've just sold the, you know, the sort of the steady Eddie dividend players like Pfizer and moved into there. And I actually think there's a lot of similarities today the were back at sort of the March 2000, because when I bought a lot of old economy stocks back then as the dot-com boom totally ripped and sucked money from sort of like, you know, older stock, perceived sort of like traditional stocks into the sort of the dot-com stocks. Mm. And I think the same thing's happening now, and that's why you're just seeing unfairly sold off. And, you know, I think as a sort of like a widow's and orphan stock, Pfizer pays a 3.5% dividend, good pipeline, trading at around about 11, 12 times PE with a solid balance sheet. So it just is a no-brainer to me. So I bought that one. And then obviously I bought Roche, which is a bit more expensive, and that's done okay. Again, sort of like sold off COVID beneficiary that is trading cheaply, strong balance sheet, good pipeline, etc. And then I bought PayPal, as you know, about when we spoke about it last time, which again is trading at about 12.5 times PE. And I said, you know, there's lots of potential upside there. And then this is the fourth one I've bought. So I'm starting to deploy capital. And I've got quite, as I say, you know, I'm looking forward to putting some money to work, knowing that, yes, the market could be flat or even down in the next 12 months. But actually, I'm, you know, as I say, I'm actually now a cautious bull, because I think what will happen is that the central banks will keep interest rates high, will crack for inflation by taking out unemployment. But when the employment hits around at 4.5-5%, which is around their target, they'll then start reducing, you know, basically their interest rates. The assumption there is that when we do hit 4.5-5%, inflation isn't then in check. It is not far from 2%. If that doesn't happen, then we've got a real problem. But I think it will. And on that basis, we'll get towards probably, you know, sort of like Q1, Q2 next year, and interest rates will start coming down. But the market will have, in small caps, will have already probably started pricing that in. So that's a sort of my strategy, is that don't worry too much about near-term noise. You know, fill your boots, but pick up some good choice stocks. And I'll be on this podcast, I'll be telling you what else I'm going to be buying. That's for sure, because you know, I think this, you know, I'm not hanging around in terms of looking at good quality businesses, all of that, like all of those four that I'm happy to hold for 3 to 5 years, and I'm not bothered about. They'll get through short-term noise.
Yeah. No, bear markets are a time to where you can make really good money after the back. So it's just at the moment, that time period of knowing, you know, how long we can go on for. Because, like I said, if you go back to the great financial crash, the central banks could solve the issue pretty much by bailing banks out, and then all of a sudden, you know, you had the stock market lift up. It did take sort of 2 years before they started realizing there's a big problem. But with this, they can't, you know, they can't really, it's only indirectly that blunt instrument of higher interest rates, which affects a lot. You know, you've got higher costs or any higher prices for people, plus they're paying more on their loans. I did see a stat recently in American debt. I don't know if you saw it as well. I can't think what it was, but it's quite worrying. First time ever, I think, the average household has like $10,000 in debt and it's on credit cards. And that's quite worrying because that's going to affect spending. I think sometimes this kind of interest rate and inflation takes a little longer to play out than the normal sort of reaction of a bear market, you know?
So yeah, that's going to be the biggest variable. But anyway, as I say, I think it's clarified my economic view in the first part of this year. Unless we basically increase unemployment, i.e. the labour market cracks, we're not going to solve the inflation genie. And therefore, the central banks are going to hold interest rates for as high as they can, unless we have an existential event, et cetera, some black swan, another one. But they're going to hold interest rates high until that labour market cracks. And I'm hoping that when it does crack, then inflation would have also cracked. That's my assumption. But you could get it such that it doesn't actually. You still get, because of the, you know, corporates actually hoarding labour, you could get it that lasts longer than even though we start seeing real weakness in the economy as people cut back. You could find that actually, yeah, the labour market doesn't crack and inflation stays high because corporates still keep pushing the prices up and labour hoard, but we'll wait and see. There was also good news actually today from Avacta, because they made a nice tuck-in acquisition of of Coris Bio Concept, which is a Belgian business that does its own sort of like quick diagnostic tests. It's got a whole portfolio of them, so it designs and makes them and sells them. Turnover is roughly just under 5 million, and the sort of the thesis behind it is to integrate it with Avacta's existing diagnostics business, particularly the one they've just bought. Well, they bought in October called Launch Diagnostics. And they're mainly a channel distributor of medical tests. And by putting this one through the same channels, you'll still see a lot of synergies in terms of sales and costs. So there could be, it's a really smart complementary move, nice tuck-in acquisition for just about 7.4 million on a good sort of like, you know, multiple, et cetera. It's on sort of like, I think it's at 1.6 times sales and just over 3 times gross margin. So what they're doing basically is, which is really tough with life science firms, is to rapidly scale businesses. Because if you think about all the regulatory approvals, not only to develop drugs and to develop diagnostics, but also to actually sell them, even if you're a distributor, it's really tough and takes ages to do through the relevant authorities, through Europe, the States, overseas, in the UK, et cetera. And what they're doing is that they're using their capital to basically buy those door opening sort of like, you know, businesses that can really allow them to rapidly scale this across the world, or particularly in Europe. So it's a really sensible move. So it's a nice, as I say, it's a nice bolt-on tuck-in acquisition that makes perfect strategic sense. And they're building a really good diagnostics business there.
Yeah, I just look at the chart there. I find it so frustrating the last few months just holding stocks. They go up, go down, go up, go down. It's like, really is testing my patience. I thought, so just cash in and just go, a worldwide trip with the missus and leave the kids alone.
Not a bad idea.
The minute I'd leave this country, the rally would start, so I'd have to drive back. Oh. But it's that frustrating. I find it really frustrating at the moment, the markets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, exactly the same thing was with Equals, because it came out with its, its trading update, its AGM trading update, about 2 weeks ago, and the shares were up at 110, and now they're below a quid. And the business is more valuable than it was before the AGM treatment. But It's just being used as an ATM because people want to sell it, take profits. And it's sort of like it's trying to tune out the noise and concentrate on the long-term signal of what's the market saying. And that business to me is saying it's absolutely flying and it's got really good opportunities, particularly once it closes that Unex acquisition out in Belgium. And that should happen, you'll get its relevant approval probably by mid-June, et cetera. And if that occurs, then it'll really start ramping up in 2024, and you'll start seeing, you know, them making a big impact to the back end of 2023 as well. And then the base business is still doing really well. So yeah, I'm with you in terms of, you know, Eagles as a struggle. Another one which I own,
that
which
broke
has
above
out,
though, it's annoying that broke above that £1 level, which is tried several times to do, and a big seller came in. Looks like 2.9 million in volume, sort of going to,
yeah, I think it was a found. I think it was original founder or somebody who, okay, you know, been in there for a long, long time and wants to sort of check out and or just sell some of their shares, etc. So I personally don't think it's any worry. It just increases the volume, the liquidity in the shares. So yeah, I think it's a positive. I mean, another one I own that came out with results is First Derivatives, FD Technologies, that's got that sort of like picks and shovels AI play that takes real time massive data feeds and sorts them and puts them in, allows people to, you then put it into sort of like, you know, your quant computing, into the sort of capital markets, all those algos, etc. And the same technology is now being deployed in the AI arena outside into other verticals, and that one is absolutely flying. Like for like sales are up 35-40%, and it should continue into for the next year. And then the base business, the sort of the old First Derivatives consultancy for financial services, yes, it's seen slowed decision making, but it's still going to see good growth this year of over 5-10%, etc. Decent margin, solid business, and a lot of that will be driven by AI implementations and running off the back of what the KX Insights business is. So the shares haven't really moved, but they've not sold. They're about 18 quid. I can see somebody putting a number on these and doing some of the parts and buying them out. But we'll wait and see. The business is doing what it said it's doing. And let's see how that KX Insights business is doing. I mean, as you remember, it signed about 18 months ago a sort of flagship deal with Microsoft Azure, who are now using it and branding it as their own service to sell into their corporate customers. And then you had another deal with Amazon Web Services only about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's got plenty. It's got a sound balance sheet, generating cash, but investing all the cash flow it generates into that KX Insights business to continue its expansion both globally and on a product line to become hopefully the de facto standard of real-time large-scale data analysis, sorting, ingestion, to then feed these large language models for things like, you know, generative AI or other AI packages. So yeah, looks good.
Yeah, it's funny. You see some, it's almost like the whole market suppressed. You get some microcaps rallying very strongly, regardless of their balance sheets. But I suppose that's more about, you know, liquidity, I suppose. There's one, have you seen Ondotech? I've been watching that for a while, actually. It's got the LeakBot thing, you know? It's got this technology.
Yes, I do. I do know it, actually. Yeah.
And I quite like the technology behind it because, like I say, the biggest insurance claims, for household insurance claims, are leaks in the house. And so insurance companies want to detect against this. And so they've got this bit of tech that you put on the pipe and it can detect the changes of the variables and they can detect there's a leak or not. And they did sort of a couple of deals. But I was looking at it recently. I thought, I wouldn't mind investing in that. I looked at the balance sheet and stuff. I thought they were about 6.7 million in debt. And they were at the time, they were only about 7 million. I thought, how are they 6 or 7 million in debt? And I think the revenues growth is quite good. I think it was like to the interims, they were up for almost double the revenues to 1 million, but they were still losing 2 million. So they're losing 2 million, got debt. But yet, it's rallied like crazy. I decided not to get in. It's like double since. So because, you know, sometimes you can go too far into the balance. Mm. But sooner or later, they did. I thought, I'm going to look at this, wait until they raise some money, and then I may get involved. And they raised some money. They raised about £800,000. that's not enough, is it, really?
Yeah, okay.
So I didn't bother. But they've probably doubled since I decided not to get in. And so it's nuts, that, isn't it? And it's a bit like Cathy Wood, that thing. It's so annoying when you see a company you decided to sell out of or not get involved in rally like crazy. And she did it with NVIDIA, didn't she? She sold in October at the bottom of NVIDIA. She decided it was overvalued. Here's her talking about value. It's like, what? That's not your stick, you know? Valuations are not your thing, really. But she decided NVIDIA's overvalued. I'll sell that right at the bottom. And it's tripled since she's sold it. And so,
yeah, but I wouldn't have a go at too much. She originally bought in 2014 at $4.
Oh, did she?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, there we are. Yes. You don't see the narrative there. That's amazing.
No. Yeah. So she didn't do too badly. She probably 20-30 bagged original investment on it. But you're right. You kind of. I mean, I just look at it. You never buy at the bottom, and you never sell. Pure fluke if you buy at the bottom or sell at the top. I mean, let's be clear about it. Stocks move as they do in the short term. They go up and down, and it all depends on people buying and selling it. And if you're lucky enough to hit that, then that's great. But who cares? If you get it right directionally over 3 to 5 years, then you tend to make money. And the more time you make money, the better, you know, sort of like your portfolio. I mean, another one when you talk about, you know, as an indicator we're in a bear market is Venture Life, because they came out with a sort of like, you know, AGM statement, all trading in line, happy with the outlook, et cetera. And the shares sold off about 10-15%. I mean, it's frankly nuts. And they're now below, well, they're about 38p. So, I mean, you know, the value of all these businesses will actually, you know, show out in due course. The durability, the recurring revenue streams, the higher margins, the geographical footprint expansion, all these, that type of IPR and branded products will do well. It just is a matter of just being patient and just, you know, not worrying too much about the short-term volatility, which happens all the time. I mean, you know, you hear so many CEOs saying, God, the market's mad, but it's mad across so many stocks other than, you know, the seven biggest AI plays in the world. Other than those, it's pretty crazy time, actually, because people are getting totally battered.
Yeah, well, in fact, looking at Venture Life, non-exec bought 50 grand's worth on the...
Yeah.
When was that, on the 25th after the...
Yeah.
So he's taking advantage of after the AGM, so he's taking advantage of it. But that's a nice chunk. When you're a non-exec taking 50 grand, now it doesn't matter how well off you are, 50 grand a decent chunk of change, isn't it, you know? So for non-exec as well. So, okay.
Well, you'll have to be telling me in the next few weeks then what you're going to deploy your money on, your 60%. Yeah. I know you're going to take a bit of time over it, but...
In fact, just to say, when actually, you know, in Destiny Pharma, when Neil, you know, went to the CEO, all the directors bought some cash, and in fact the chairman bought a nice chunk of shares in the company. So that says to me, you wouldn't just throw money away like that if something's going wrong, you know. You wouldn't just try and short the share price if it's going the wrong direction. I will be looking around. I mean, but the thing is, I said one of the biggest mistakes I always make is going too big and too early. You know?
Too impulsive, you? No.
I know.
I've not heard that, Justin.
I am very impulsive. I can go from one extreme to the next. But I go too big too early, and he realizes there's always more time. And even if you see a share price rising, it always comes back sometimes. You can top up a bit more if it's going the right direction. But going too big too early, then it goes against you. You think, I don't know. So, I try and take my time. That's a lesson I need to learn a bit, you know? Take your time.
Well, I'm still continuing to looking at tech, healthcare, and I'm you know, looking at lots of the picks and shovels AI plays, trying to find stuff that you know, that I can put some money in. So watch this space, so to speak. I would say, in terms of timing, we've got some pretty big macro data points coming up. Tomorrow we've got the US non-farm payrolls. If you get a strong labor market, then it's going to solidify that the Fed's going to increase interest rates on the 14th of June. If that happens, then it's going to be the classic bad. Good news is bad news. And we're going to see, you know, a sell-off in anything that is interest rate sensitive. And then we've also got, in between that, we've got the CPI data. Now, I think that's going to be a bit of a ho-hum. You're going to get the continued sort of like, you know, disinflation on the good side, but solid, sticky inflation on the services side. So I can't see too much on that. But I would say, if you're looking for timing to put some money to work and you're a bit nervous, then you may want to wait until the Fed has decided what they're going to do on interest rates. I think we can also assume safely that the Bank of England's going to increase interest rates. I mean, now it's priced to go from 4.5% to almost 5.5% over the next few months. Mm-hmm. And again, that's came down. I mean, we had some pretty ripping inflation numbers, didn't we? You saw shop prices increasing by 9%, yeah. Like, you know, and that's mainly driven by food. So, and as I say, I'm clearer, even though there's lots of people are complaining in terms of there's not enough clarity in the data. I'm actually clearer myself that what we've absolutely confirmed categorically this year so far is that inflation, wage inflation, is not coming down unless we actually have unemployment ticking up. It just isn't gonna, this soft landing whereby we're going to get naturally inflation comes down without impacting the labour market. That assumption just isn't, I just can't see it, because we've just proved it after 5 months, it doesn't work. And so interest rates are going to stay higher for longer until that labour market cracks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really important. That is really important for when it comes to putting, you know, deploying capital, because it will tell you how much pain we need to endure and how deep and long the recession will be for, later on.
I know. I mean, in this market, I said I benefited lots, but honestly, just saying, waiting for final results coming out. So wait, you've always got a bit more time, you know, because if you're not sure, rather than trying to gamble or pre-guess what's going to happen, just wait and see what the actual data is on most. Because I've seen lots of companies, you know, fall off, you know, a cliff on the financial results or interim results. And in fact, that's why I was quite encouraged by XPF. I mean, they rose on the financial, and then all of a sudden people just sold into it. And what's going on? It's like so when you that's a good sign. When you get a company actually releasing the, you know, full year results or something like that, or interim results, and the share price rises, and then all of a sudden it gets sold into, that's a good thing. What you don't want is they release the results and go straight down like a rock, you know. So because the market's not liking it, but be encouraged if it starts to rise, and then you get some people taking profit, you know.
One big positive on the macro side to watch out for, and I keep sort of like, you know, talking about it, but you hear more, you know, it was in the Wall Street Journal, is that if we do get that ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine, then, you know, that will, sentiment-wise, it will change. It may not economically in terms of the immediate hit to the world economy, but sentiment-wise, it will change it huge. And just think about all the contractors and builders who have got to sort of like reconstruct, you know, that country. And, you know, that will help all supply chains in Europe when it comes to, you know, to do that. And that might be good a buying opportunity for defence stocks and oil stocks as well, because they would probably roll over.
Well, let's hope that happens anyway, not just for investing reasons, but it's an awful situation.
Yes.
Marvellous stuff. Paul, thanks for that. Speak in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.